Welcome back to Words from the Woods, a Trails Rock podcast. We are joined today by Ron Hirkins Jr. of Goat Factory Media to talk adventure photography and getting the perfect shot. Ron was one of the founders of Trails Rock, so we'll dip into that a bit, and we even have his wife Elise here to help keep us on track with some real adventure stories of helping Ron get on location so that he can get that picture that you put on social media, hang on your mantle, or share at the office at work. We have a lot to get to, so sit tight and fire away. Hit me with your best shot, Ron.
All right, we are back, and we are excited tonight to have not one but two special guests here to speak with us. So we are going to tonight talk to Ron and Elise Hirkins. But before we do, Eric has some information he'd like to share.
My humble brag. On January 12th, we did a Hot Takes episode, and I said the next big market and boom was going to be Asia, and that trail running was going to take off in Asia. And I had a few people comment back that they thought I was wrong. But the Golden Trail World Series, not January, December 12th, the Golden Trail World Series is making its move into that market. They're going to be starting in Japan next year, and then the next week the race will be in China. So they'll do back-to-back races in Asia. The idea really is that people won't have to travel to Asia twice on different parts of the calendar year, so they're hoping, hey, you can stay for like a week or a week and a half. But the Kobe Trail Race in Japan is actually created by the Golden Trail World Series. And then they'll move on to China. So I nailed it. Asia, next big market. And I think UTMB is going to be putting on an event in India as well, which technically counts as Asia. Not technically, is.
Yeah.
So I was good.
Well done. Well done. So we had a really good response from our episode last week about finances. So make sure you go back and check that out if you haven't already. And then just some housekeeping notes before we get started, that we are currently looking for trail ambassadors for 2024. So what is a trail ambassador, Eric?
A Trails Rock ambassador.
Yes, my apologies.
Leading group runs, helping out at some races. You get free races, you get free swag, and you get to meet cool people. So if you want to help us out by leading some group runs and being an ambassador, hit us up, trailsrock@gmail.com. On to Ron and Elise.
Woohoo!
So Ron and Elise, I like to make them go everywhere together like Sheila and I do. So they're here. We're going to talk a lot about...
Technically, it's Elise and Ron.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean...
She always comes first.
Always. Content warning. So, Ron...
Set yourself up for that.
You don't have a disclaimer at the beginning?
Now I have to. Actually, I don't. It was subtle
enough. Not made for kids.
Yeah, right? Well, it's not a Weldon podcast, so there shouldn't be as much cussing. So, but Ron
How many
was...
How have you been on with me?
I know. Lately. Ron was a founding member of Trails Rock, and I would go as far to say as the person who really did the legwork to get us all together the first night. What do you remember really about that, Ron?
Three dudes. Hey, I don't know any of you. Do you want to meet up at Perkins? Because it seems like it's the most, not Perkins, Red Robin. Which
Robin.
Is the most farthest away from everybody.
Nobody lived near it.
I was in East Rochester, Ben was in Fairport, and Sean is out in Chilai, and you're
in Greece.
And we go to Webster, Red Robin.
Yeah.
I do remember I had a milkshake.
That's surprising.
I was just going to say,
Elise,
so...
did you have the same thought as Sheila? Like, what are you doing?
Where are you going and what are you doing?
Yeah.
With nobody that you know.
Just going to meet some guys from the internet.
Totally normal.
No,
yep.
She had no care.
We essentially had a website by the next day. It was horrible, but it was there.
Yeah.
It was live. So, but we had a lot of fun adventures over those years, creating events, putting things together, designing the website, all the stuff that sort of lives now started then. So, I loved those early days.
Yeah, like some of my favorite moments from running and life in general were probably from those first couple of years.
Yeah.
Just like I was new to the running scene in general. You came from a background of running. Sean and Ben were kind of in the same loop where I was, and we were all trying to get back into running at the same time. And
yeah.
We all, with the exception of somebody in this group, were training towards Sega Honda. So we all shared like a common goal. But at the beginning, it was just the five of us because Sheila came along. Sheila's kind of new with donuts and like donuts and 5Ks.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and going running around Tryon and Lucian over and over because we like this is a great training ground for what we do. And so, you know, I was at the stage that then my girls were.
They were little.
Yeah.
8 and 6.
Wild.
It's been really interesting to watch all the kids grow up over the last 10 years or so.
Like, you guys have a kid in college. She's not a
kid. She's entering a new decade this year.
It sounds like
ready.
She's not a kid.
She's not a kid anymore.
And the other one is in high school. Like, wild.
And you
wild.
Watch them grow up, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And they've come around to events and helped out different times and
run events
and whined a little bit sometimes about is it time to go home,
but
troopers.
Now helping out and like actively wanting to be there, helping you out, Ron, with like photography. Sorry, Eric just.
Sheila's like flinging her mic all over the place.
I'm using my hands to talk. Apparently, I don't know why. I don't think that's something I usually do, but tonight apparently. It's gonna happen. Anyways.
Well, let's get to it, right? So we want to talk a little bit about photography. We're gonna get to Elise and ask a little bit about some of the adventures that come with it.
Elise, how is photography for you?
Yeah, she'll have her chance. But really, when you were with the board before you really ventured out big time into the adventure photography, you were taking pictures with some of our events and they were great. But when did you really fall in love with doing this?
The first time, so I went up to run Whiteface.
In the Adirondacks.
In the Adirondacks. There was a Whiteface weekend that Ian Golden of Red Newt put on. And I was doing some stuff, and Ian had seen some of my photos, and he just asked me to just take photos for the event that I wasn't running. And I did, and it was the vertical VK.
Okay.
And it was just something about capturing runners in that moment on top of that mountain, giving it everything they have, and also having this amazing freaking backdrop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like any of those pictures from that first year.
You are often your own worst critic.
But at the same time, you know, I think even by that time I might have been hired for a couple events by then or not. I can't remember, but that was the first time I was like, yeah.
This is it. This is
what I want to do. Yeah. And it kind of expounded into like my philosophy of like not hanging around aid stations and being that photographer.
Right.
I'd rather be the photographer that goes 2 to 3 miles out on the course somewhere where you're not expecting me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm there. And then having that lovely conversation, oh, I must be near the aid station.
And you're like, bad news.
We'll definitely get to that.
Did you, because you also do a lot of photography for the theater, so how did those two things coincide? Were you already doing photography for the theater when you started doing trail photography?
So theater photography is where I started. I was working with Blackfriars Theater, and their photographer left, and they didn't have anybody that could do photography, so they literally just went out and picked up a Kodak quick camera, you know, the little point and shoots, and handed it to me and said, can you just take some photos of, and we'll do some stage shots. And that was my first ever doing it. I'm like, well, this is fun.
Yeah.
And I could get paid for this? Cool. I like money. Money pays for new gear and adventures. So there's a reason behind that. Mm-hmm. But that led to me getting a whole kit set there. And I photographed for Blackfriars all the way up until so that was 2005 or 2006 until 2000, 2009 to 2011 somewhere. I think it was 2009 when we moved into the new theater. And then people just started taking advantage of, hey, you have a camera, you want to come and do this? And I just dropped everything.
Yeah.
I like walked away from it, didn't touch it until I want to say, so I was I had a point and shoot that I had when I went out running that I would take landscape stuff of just for personal shit. And then I think Eric had an article that he was doing for somebody that
Trevor Magazine,
Yuga. And so I borrowed a friend's camera that had one, and we went out and shot a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, we covered the whole day together. It was really cool. So we were the night before at like the elite camp and hung out at campfires talking with the racers. And then morning we helped set up the aid station that Trails Rock was going to run. But then we spent the day following runners around. And I was writing a story and you were taking pictures to tell a story. And we sort of weaved that together. It was kind of neat.
Ghosts.
Yeah, something just fell.
So that was kind of probably like when things started picking back up for me, when I looked at Elise and said I might be getting back into this. And then somebody at the theater at Jiva said, hey, I know you used to take photos, and asked me to come in and take some photos for him for one of the shows. And you know, I hadn't had anything underneath my belt in like 5 years. And walked back in, took some photos of Jiva, and then like 3 shows later I was hired by another theater, and then it just kind of
snowballed from there.
But theater photography and trail photography are symbiotic to me in the way that they both are how you play with light and being able to quickly react to what you're seeing. And so you don't have a lot of time to think. You have to rely on everything that you've been learning up to that point.
I think if so there's people are always like talking about I just have I can use my iPhone and I can get a great picture with my iPhone. And I think if you go to your website and you look, I would say definitely especially with the low light and neat light situations on trail running, but when you look at those theater pictures, you could never do that with just like a point and click. So there's a skill involved that you've really spent the last decade sort of working on and learning and how to use the equipment. And I'm sure you've done a ton of stuff at home, just like shooting pictures of the family and the pets and saying like, right. I mean, how does it all meld together?
Elisa's laughing.
I got a new camera. I got a new lens. Let's take pictures of everybody.
Yeah.
It's fun because the dogs are like, oh, it's time to play. Let's go see what's going on.
But I don't overdo it.
No.
Like, I don't do family photos.
He doesn't do our family photos.
One of the rules I had when I started all this back up is that I'm doing it as a business. And that's
right.
It. I don't set us all up and do a family photo every year.
We had somebody else do senior photos.
I
didn't want him to do that.
I like that though. Like when we hang out, it's you're not bringing your gear and lugging around. Like there's some like camera nerds that are just like that's all they. And I'm like, hey, just like take a breath, like you know, like hang out with people.
Yep.
I found I miss too much of life if I'm always looking through the lens.
Yeah.
And because it is, you know, it's at the tipping point where it's becoming my primary business, and that I want it to be that. I want it to be enjoyable so that every time I pick up a camera, I'm having fun doing what I'm doing. If I was constantly holding one,
right,
I don't. And that's why even like my video stuff, like I would love to be like out there filming every time I'm running.
Right.
I can't.
Yeah. I used to, I did an internship with the Buffalo Bisons AAA affiliate baseball team, and it was PR for them. So I was there all day, you know, every game day, like leading into it, doing all the pre stuff. And then you're there every night for the game. And then there's the post game wrap up. And I didn't want to watch baseball at the end of that. And I was like, you know what? I don't think that's the career for me because I love sports. And it was like ruining it for me because it was like, that's all I did. Every single day is just buried in it. And it was like, I needed to get away from it and to enjoy it again. So I can get that. Elise, tell me a little bit about when Ron comes home from an adventure or from a photo shoot, and you know it went well, or you know he didn't think it went well.
Not so much not going well, because most of them, I'd say 90% of the time, he doesn't show that they don't go well. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's a definite routine, especially if he's coming home from a long weekend where he's been away for, you know, it's a traveling job where he's been away for 6+ hours for a whole weekend. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. give him time to unload, give him time to decompress, let him, because most of those weekends, he hasn't slept.
Right.
He slept maybe 2 hours, 3 hours, and I know that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, just let him. You got to let him be, let him unload. He's got to download. And it's like, there's like a step, like, you know, he unloads the car, he downloads, he does his thing, and then we crash.
Yeah. And you just stay out of the way.
Yes, pretty much. Like, I know his,
it's probably a lot like, it's probably a lot like post-race. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I want to put stuff away when the race is over. I just want it to be done.
Yeah. Because if I come home on a Sunday night or if I come home like on a Monday,
he's got to turn around and go to work.
I either got to turn around and go to work, but at the same time, I want everything to be put away because when I either wake up from crashing mm-hmm. or wake up the next morning,
right.
I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
And most of the time, like when my seasons interlap, I don't have that time.
But that's what I was
so
just
I need
down,
to unload everything downtime. And put stuff on the chargers because download all the photos, back up all the photos, and get my gear ready for the next job.
Right.
Which doesn't leave a lot of time.
Right.
I mean, we're staring into the next couple months into busy season that it is, you've got weekends, you've got during the week, you've got another weekend, you've got another weekend, and it's...
Right. But on top of both of you have...
Full-time jobs.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And a house, and kids, yep. and
yeah.
your own personal things that you want to do.
Well, it's fitting our... You know, our trips into his.
Well, I was going to ask, it's kind of a little bit about, like, what else do you do, Elise, like, when Ron's out in the woods all day? So we're going to take a break in a little bit, and I want to have a little story time. But, like, so sometimes you're driving the van. Yep. Sometimes you're helping out at an aid station. Like, what are those days like for you? Are you checking in with him? Or
even when he's not home, like, if he's doing it on his own, we're in constant contact, constant check, especially if I'm driving on course for him.
Right.
We're in constant contact, which is hard in some of these places because there's no
cell phone service.
Cell service. So it is a lot of like smoke he's signals. Given me well, or he's given me like a Google pin ahead of time.
Right.
So then I'm like, okay, here's this.
I gotta get to this space at this time.
I mean, we haven't really done any with old school maps in a while.
No, because the nice thing about technology is you can offload map things. So I'll
usually, if
I'm leaving her, I'll download the offload map so she has the iPad that has the maps on it all
in case she needs it.
Yeah, and then I'm like, and most of them that we're doing over and over again, I've done before, so I know, okay, this is where I need to go, this is where I need to go.
Right.
Or it's just, okay, let's get somewhere where I can pull up a map and make sure I'm in the right spot. But we are, even when I'm running it at an aid station and he's out, we're still in contact, like, hey, I'm this far out, this is where I am, I'll be back in an hour. Mm-hmm.
There's like a lot of logistics. So I know as a photographer, you had mentioned, like, you don't want to be the guy that just stands in the aid station, gets a picture of somebody coming in, gets a picture of some people eating, they get a picture of somebody leaving, right? So you're out on the course. So, like, what are the logistics of something like that look like, knowing the course?
Yeah, how do you know where
fit,
to go?
Like, yeah, how does that work for you?
Well, since you've known me, what is probably one of the most things you know that I can't do?
Go without a plan.
Go without a plan, and I can't stand still.
He can't stand still.
Yeah.
I always have to be doing something, but I will game plan everything out as much as I can. You know, I bug the race directors for give me their GPS tracks if there's mm-hmm. more than one race, and kind of look at like the overall picture of like, okay, the packet pickup starts at 4 a.m. The race number one starts at 5 a.m. The next race starts at 7 a.m. and whatnot. And then look at the GPS track and try to figure out who are the people that are running. Like if I can't find on Ultracitem who's running, I ask the race directors and like, hey, how fast do you think these guys are going to be? Where do you think the back of the pack is going to be? And then a lot of improvising throughout the day. but I'm really good with being able to navigate courses. I can look at a GPS track and figure out where I need to go pretty quick and how to take shortcuts. And I've gone down some super sketchy roads with the van, but I've made it work. You know, I it was a non-client race. I was following Jamie Hobbs for Massanutten a couple years ago. And there was, I don't know, it was like the seventh or eighth aid station that we were going to meet him at. And I was videoing him for the Beast Coast series. Video series. Yeah. And so I've been following him all day. His dad's been following him all day separately from me. And I'm supposed to meet them both at this. Well, there's two ways up to the aid station. And the road that I took looked perfectly fine. And all of a sudden it went from about a 10-foot road to a 5-foot road. And the van is not very small.
Yeah.
And so I get up to the aid station and it's you can't cross to the other side to turn around.
Oh, geez.
So I had to turn the van around on this 5-foot road with a sheer cliff on the backside. So it was like a 16-point turn with this van. But I did it. And it's like ever since then, I'm just like, I trust myself. But the logistics of just, I pour through everything. I start, I try not to get too ahead of myself just because events overlap each other like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have something in 2 weeks, I'll probably look at it the week before just mm-hmm. so I can have a fresh mind.
Fresh in your, yeah.
Or so I don't confuse like, this race started at 5 and that race started at 8.
Right.
The good thing is a lot of races repeat themselves, but I've also had race directors surprise me like the night before and, the 50K is going off on Sunday, not Saturday.
Oh, geez.
And so like the race is split. So I've had to add a day. I've had races where I've subtracted a day because the races both got put on the same day. So they started at different times. They got stage race. So you have to be able to be very flexible mm-hmm. and improvise. And for me, the key has been working with race directors that are understanding.
Yeah. And not everybody is as planful as others. Like some people are shoot from the hip kind of folks. And some people are like you and I are just like, we want everything planned out.
Yes. All right. So I think we are going to take a pause here. And when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit more about some specific stories because we have heard some really hilarious stories from both Ron and Elise. And we'll talk more about what makes good race photography. So we will be right back.
All right, we're back after that little awkward transition to break. I had to run out quickly out of the room, and now I'm back. So, Ron, I wanted to talk a little bit. So we were talking about logistics and knowing the course and really being prepared and being flexible I feel like that's what goes into event management in general. And essentially that's what adventure photography is. It's almost just like event management, but I wanted to talk a little bit about like, and I'll probably touch on it, maybe Sheila will too, but what do you think is the value that race photography brings to an event? From your perspective,
stumped.
Got him.
No, I'm trying to put the best metaphor forward. And when you walk into McDonald's, and what's the image of McDonald's or the burger that you have in your mind?
Yeah, they're like perfect.
What sells it to you?
Right.
To but, come.
Yeah, that great picture of a double quarter pounder with cheese and it's just perfectly melted and some pickles sticking there.
Now, if you instead got a iPhone photo of what you actually get,
right?
Yeah. And that was, would you want to go?
Right. No.
No. That's probably a very poor metaphor, but I think the right images paired with the right story can sell any race.
Right.
No matter if the race is good or not.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a 1 mile loop. if you find some place on that course that you can find something, I don't mean to sound like off the wall here, but where magic happens, you know.
Well, you did you did a video for Last Runner Standing, which is a 1 mile loop, and you found a way to showcase like 15 spots. on the course. There's a little spot along the highway. There's a bridge across the creek. There's one little hill. There's the finish line area. And there's like, it wasn't a video of just people coming through the loop, right? It was like constantly showing varied parts of the trail. And that was a 1 mile loop. And that video, I love that video.
It's funny because I like when I think of the Last Runner Standing course, I just don't think that it's a remarkable course in any way. And then when I see the video or see pictures, I'm like, oh, wow, there are some really cool parts of this course in that 1 mile. So like Eric's saying, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know,
you find a way to capture like the cool parts.
And like from a event producing standpoint, like you said, being able to like showcase, like somebody might be coming to your area of the country one time. And so like, how can you convince them to come in? Right. Like let's take Many on the Jenny, and there's how many spots are down there, right? That you've got the bridge and you've got the waterfalls and got all this stuff. And I want to showcase that because I want to convince people to come and do it because we love it.
So I have this story. The race director of Many on the Jenny contacted me for some photos about a week and a half ago.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Asking like, what were the best photos that we can showcase? And you know, we chose,
yeah, a handful.
Five to
yeah.
10 of them that I like. These are ones that I would feel proud to be put anywhere.
Right.
And the publication didn't use any of them and used things that, you know.
I don't even know where the high five picture that they used came from.
The high five that's labeled as an aid station that's the finish line?
Right.
Yeah.
But nothing in there portrayed to me this is what the – I mean,
yeah.
It portrayed the vibe that, yeah, you know, we're happy
right.
people.
Grassroots
we have
little
fun.
Thing.
Grassroots. But visually, Letchworth is one of the coolest places that we have around here.
Yeah, you have this, like, iconic picture of a stone arch bridge that was built by the Civilian Conservation Corps with this 70-foot waterfall in the backdrop with mist coming up. And you have a picture where it's one runner in the middle of the bridge. There's no one else on it. It's not edited. You got this perfect shot. And they were like, yeah, you know, maybe not that one.
You're like, here's a group of people in the woods. Just the random woods. Nothing special about the woods.
For longtime listeners of the show, you'll probably know James Miner. So Jim was actually the first person I was actually able to get perfectly lined where I wanted in the photo. And I told Jim that right after he came through. I said, you just made the photo for me. Like, I've been sitting here for 45 minutes. Every single person would come across the bridge, turn around and take a photo of the waterfall.
Right, they would stop. They would take a picture. Yep.
And
yeah.
Jim was the only person that came through.
And just ran.
There was nobody on either side of him. And he got perfectly lined up, perfect runner stride. And I'm like, thank you, Jim.
We'll put the link to that picture right in the show notes. Because it's like an iconic picture. It's fantastic. It showcases that view that everybody's stopping and looking at. You captured it in the moment.
And there's times when I'd love to like have somebody with me to just stand over there and tell people,
just keep going.
So you can have this really cool shot.
Right.
Like, you're going to get the waterfall in your shot. You're going to be in front of the waterfall.
Right.
It's going to look cool. And I've also thought about, like, maybe I'll just print these big ass signs and carry them with me. I'm like, why would I do that?
That's a lot of work.
Add like another 10 pounds to what I'm carrying around. And so a lot of it just comes down to pure luck.
Yeah. And you were in a spot where no one would even known you were out taking pictures. And sometimes that happens. In order to get a picture from somewhere else, you've got to be in a different spot where they might not even know you're there.
You like to hide.
Was it this year? I think I posted like, here's Ron's tips of like.
Yes. Yeah.
And like one of them was don't be a ham.
Right.
and there's a reason for that. But one of those is I try to put myself in position so that you don't realize I'm there taking pictures.
Right.
Even if you've ran the race 10 times and you know that this is where I take photos, I try to not draw attention to myself because I want to capture you doing your thing and telling your story. As soon as you see me, people tend to like, oh, I got to straighten up, got to get my ride straight, I got to look like I'm having the time of my life, when in reality, you may be 50 to 60 miles deep in this race and having the worst time of your life. What would be cooler is seeing a picture of you in digging deep into determination. That's why I love catching people climbing up rocky, nasty terrain.
Yeah. On the Some Work All Play podcast today, Megan and David Roche talk about that because they literally said every time I see a photographer and I try to, you know, run perfect or you know, look, get my – and he's like, I just look like a fool. He's like, my arms are in places. They're probably never really in. He's like, because it's just not natural when you start acting. Where he's like, I'm basically running strides to make it look like I have a big step and then I'm exhausted and I didn't even like the picture afterwards because it's like not normal.
Well, it's like posed pictures versus candids. Like anytime you're taking any pictures of anything, I feel like – post pictures a lot of times look awkward.
I hate step and repeats. I'm asked by lots of race directors to do step and repeats, and I now have two races that I do that do them, but I've turned down plenty because I'm like, go hire somebody else to do that because it's not fun.
Not your style,
it's
yeah.
It's not fun because they're, and half the people hate it.
Right.
They hate it. They're like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do posing.
Right.
And so I'm also somebody who hates being in front of the camera. So I would prefer never seeing a photographer on the course.
Eric just took a picture of Ron.
Part of my approach to it is just to kind of stay hidden, be in those places that people aren't expecting me to be in, mm-hmm. so that I can capture them doing
Yeah, and I feel like I can tell the people that really didn't know you were there. Or people that were really into their race in the moment. Like, some of those pictures are just, like, you know, if you've got an overlook and they're just sort of glancing at it as they're striding through and they don't know you're there, and it's, like, you're capturing, like, a couple of things. You've got this, like, beautiful view, a runner right in that perspective, and then you're actually capturing the moment that they saw during their race, which is really kind of neat for them to be able to look back on and be like, oh, my God, when I ran through there, this was happening or that was happening, and it sort of helps them tell a story. Which is partly why we do this.
Going back to Letchworth, Weldon gave me one of my top 10 all-time shots this year.
At Many Light?
At Many Light. And it was at another spot where it was like, was it started to rain or something like that? It was super foggy. And everybody was stopping to look at this beautiful overlook.
Mm-hmm.
And Weldon was just 100% laser focused on his race. And he didn't even, I don't know if he saw me there or even said anything, but he just gave me this perfect line shot. I'm like, that's
the one.
I'm done. I can retire and be happy that I took that shot.
Yeah.
And there's another one at the top of Whiteface that most people who know me have seen at least once or twice. It's the one with, I'm forgetting his name right now.
But this guy with the beard that's kind of blowing in.
Coach from PA.
Yeah.
And he's just focused. He's not looking at me. I don't even think he knew I was there taking photos. And he's looking up at the finish line. Like, he was just going for it. And it's moments like that I love. And I'm just like, yeah, I can do it. But if you want to sit there and, like, stop in the middle of the trail and give me the sun's out, guns out, I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Or
people want to jump together and get a picture in the air and they never time it right.
and the problem with doing stuff like that, it's part of, goes back to my like the tips for a good photo is like clumping up in groups and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're denying somebody else a photo.
Right.
There may be somebody that's running behind you and now you've slowed down and you've blocked their photo and now they don't get a photo now.
Right. And it's hard to get pictures of everybody.
Absolutely.
So let's take Manny on the Jenny. You'll have a winner of the race that comes through in about 6 hours, and you'll have your last place finisher who will come through in around 14 hours. So when you spread out that quickly, you have literally 20 miles between the first place runner and the back of the pack. How do you try to capture all of that? And this is, we're going to bring Elise in on this in a minute, but like, that's hard to do, right?
It is. Loop courses are a little bit easier. Because you have multiple shots at doing it, and you can hit multiple places. But I photograph an insane amount of point-to-point races, or at least out and backs. And the out or the point-to-points make it really difficult. And one thing I've developed is, especially if I've covered a race year after year, is it's kind of an overlapping thing. So I'll go out to someplace in the 2 to 3 mile range. So I can capture at least everybody at least once.
Right.
For the most part. You'd be surprised at like even at that point.
Well, if you have someone that... running a 6 minute mile and someone running a 16 minute mile and you're 3 miles in, you've got 30 minutes in between them already.
And by the time those later people come in, now think where the first runners are.
Right. So how do you catch back up?
And so I have one, typically on a, that is what I'll do is I'll jump way up to either catch the leaders in one or two more spots. And then I start doing overlapping. So I'll catch a group. So like 15 through 20 came through. So I moved to the next spot. 20 to 25 came through and they just keep overlapping each other. And so some people will end up with more photos, but there gets to a point where I've tried to convince race directors to bring on a second photographer.
Right.
But it's a hard thing to do. And so there's people that will inevitably get lost in the photos. And it'll typically be the front of the pack or the extreme back of the pack.
Right.
And when races have cutoffs, it tends to end up being the back of the pack because you have to figure out, like, where's the bulk of the race? And most people that end up getting cut off don't want a photo of themselves.
Yeah. So let's talk. I want to talk a little bit about the logistics of this, and this is where Elise comes in.
Yeah, and how you are doing all this leapfrogging of runners.
So like, you've got point-to-point races. So if you hike out 3 miles onto a course, if you're gonna hike back 3 miles, so now you've spent 6 miles, and you know the back. If you're going even at a 15-minute pace to get back, you've just spent 45 minutes. Going backwards while the race is going the other direction. So I know, like in many on the Jenny, sometimes Elise drives the van, right?
Yep.
And she goes ahead. Yep. Well, why don't you explain it?
Well, we start off together usually, and we've got certain points where I'll drop him off, and he's like, "All right, go so far up to the next point, and I'll meet you there." And then I pick him up, we move him to the next one. So he's out hiking at least. I mean, some of them you're 3 miles plus, give or take, out there, and I'm driving ahead. But it is kind of funny at Many on the Jenny, though, because I will park in certain, like, obvious locations, and people are like, "Oh, he's nearby. Oh, where is
the,
he?
The van gives him away.
The van gives away, but they don't know where he is.
Right.
They don't know how far out he is. But that one is nice, having done it multiple years now, as we know, all right, I'm going here, we're going here. He doesn't have to tell me, really, anymore. Like, this is where we're going. But other ones, it's nice to be able to help him and be like, okay. He doesn't have to do that back and forth.
When earlier you were talking about you might end up in a spot with no cell phone service, or Ryan was talking about taking that van down some janky roads. I know that you've been in some tight spots. So one of those happened at Many and the Jenny, and you were in a pickle, and you had to work your way through it without Ron, without help from us.
No,
like, what? What was that all about?
So I was probably just at the beginning of River Road. And River Road,
a big chunk of it is seasonal.
Is a seasonal limited use highway. And we had a storm come through, what was it, like 2 days prior, I think, of rainstorm that had taken down trees, there were huge puddles everywhere.
Yeah.
And
being a seasonal limited use highway, you never know what you're going to get.
Right.
And
big potholes and down trees.
Yes. And the big potholes I can handle. That's not too bad. But when you're driving down River Road, which is a single lane road, and you come upon a huge downed tree. And I get out. I look. And I'm like, yeah, that's not going anywhere. And I look behind.
A huge downed tree that would take Todd Beverly probably about 2 days to get through.
2 days to get through. It was that huge tree.
I love that you got out, though. And you were like, I don't know. Can I?
And look, because you don't know. Because you're like, okay, you're up high. But of course, do I take out my phone to take a picture of said tree to prove that it was actually there? No, I don't. But we do have a camera, so we could always go back there.
True.
But I'm looking behind me, and I'm like, this is a single lane road with there's no turnarounds. And I'm looking on either side of the road thinking, okay, maybe
it's
tight.
It's really
into
tight.
The bushes. And I'm like, no, there's like
a drop off. Yeah.
So I legit backed down River Road at least maybe a mile or so to the
And when we're talking about the van, what is the van?
136
Promaster. It's a Dodge Ram Promaster.
Dodge Ram Promaster. Those big work vans.
A big van that has no rear view mirror. You're going on a backup camera and side view mirrors and backed down till at least it was a little wider so I could turn around, get back to River Road, back to 436. And I'm like, okay, still no cell service.
Now what?
Now what? Because I need to pick him up on River Road. And I'm like, going to where I can pull up a map. And I'm like, looking. I'm like, there's got to be another road. So I pick said random road. to go down to, which, having, keep in mind, there was a storm
right.
2 days prior. So
a
this
massive
was
storm.
Just as bad with potholes and yeah. puddles. And I was like, great, am I going to encounter? So I do get back to River Road. And then I was like, crap, do I go left?
Yeah, which way on River Road?
Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, let's just pick right. And I picked correctly. But you're sitting out there with no cell service. I've got nobody
right.
in the back of my head. And I was like, oh, damn, I should have had Phil Nesbitt's phone number. Then I could, he could have helped me. And I'm like,
yeah,
I couldn't
there's no
text,
way to, like,
I couldn't text you. I couldn't text Sheila. There was nobody
right.
even. And I was like, well, we're just going to go for it. And
yeah.
And it is what
I
it
mean,
is.
It worked. But that's now, every year since, we've now driven River Road prior
time.
To the race, like the night before, mm-hmm. to see if there are any trees
yeah.
down, because it's now a running
well, so
dirt.
That storm, they actually called it a deluge.
Yes.
It was, 4 inches of rain fell in 12 hours.
Yeah.
It was – I've never seen anything like it in that park. They had to close the dam. We had tried to mark the course, and it was a little wet. And then we went back down to check the course markings, and the – you know, it was 30 feet.
Gone.
Yeah, it was like 30 feet underwater. Like we had to reroute the whole course.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And you guys were
down there and you could barely see the trail marker.
Yeah. Right.
We're like, that trail marker is like 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
Right? And you could just see the very tip top of it.
But yeah, we last year drove River Road from one end to the other.
Yeah.
The night before
and
the
so
race.
So these are the things
sure.
that
I
think a lot
say,
of people
yeah.
don't think about,
realize.
Right? So like yeah. when you, even event directors. So like you and I, Ron, like we're close. We talk about this stuff all the time. We talk about like the finances of races. We talk about everything. But people don't consider it. So like Elise is out there driving the van, which is, it costs money to be doing that. And you have to scout things out. So you're checking that road the night before, which again means you're driving. Your time is there, so like you can't do anything else the night before because you're scouting to make sure your routes are clean for the next day so that you can get where you need to get to take the pictures that you've been paid to take. So nobody takes that into consideration at all. And then that doesn't end the work when the event is over, right? So the last runner comes through, you take that last picture of your day, you put your camera in the bag, and then the race is over, right? And I always say this with what runners don't always get with race directing is we're days away from being done. The same goes for you as well, right?
Yeah. Yep. Usually I get home and, like she's already talked about, that I just dump everything, you know, bring everything in, start looking towards, like, okay, what do I have next? How much room do I have in the calendar to, like, take a crash? Do I have the room to actually crash when I get home,
mm-hmm.
or do I need to start downloading everything? And you know, I try to, within 24 hours of being home, get the highlights up. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I'll be pulling into the driveway and I'll get emails or Facebook messages
yeah.
or Instagram messages asking when the photos would be up. And I want to scream because it's like, I've been on the road for 8 hours.
Right.
That's a great episode title.
Slept.
Yeah. I want to scream.
I haven't slept. I just got home. Haven't even looked at the photos.
Right.
Like literally everything is on my camera or it's been backed up to my SSD before I got home.
Mm-hmm.
But even when I get home, like they have to process before I can look at them.
Right.
And the highlights, usually I'll get home and it's a quick like, I'll scroll through like super fast and like
mm-hmm.
what pops out to me. And I'll kind of make mental notes of like, oh, I want to see what this location looked like. And then I'll find somebody in that location. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. And so I'll get a half dozen to a dozen out or a dozen to two dozen out for the race directors for the highlights so that they can have their stuff. And then I need to step away.
Right.
I can't go into a full coal immediately after race because if I do, I will go insane. And so I'll usually will start culling the next day. And, you know, I could have 3,000, 5,000
yeah,
plus
I mean,
photos.
If you take a 14-hour event with yeah. pictures the night before, pictures from pre-race, like.
And for culling, I could probably only get through about 250 an hour.
Yeah.
So it adds up quickly.
Well, you got to look at each individual picture and see, like, did that one work? Did that one not work? Was it out of focus? Was it garbage? Was it out of frame? Was somebody doing something stupid in the background? Like,
yep. And I've gotten pretty good with being able to quickly determine whether a photo is garbage.
Yeah.
If it takes me longer than 10 seconds to say yes or no, it's automatically a no. So there's a lot of photos that end up on the ground. And so
right.
I may take 3,000 to 5,000 photos, but you got to understand I'm shooting with a high frame rate camera.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have 10 photos in a row of you running.
Yeah, like which one's the one?
Maybe one of those are good.
Right.
And if it's not something I feel comfortable putting my name on and putting up there, I won't post it.
Right.
So I
yeah, it's weird because some people would probably be like, I just want to see the picture.
I'll get to that.
Yeah.
So my goal is usually a 10 to 20% cull
right.
from what I shoot. And I'm pretty upfront with that with the race directors. When I talk to them, I said, like, my goal is quality over quantity.
Mm-hmm.
I've been around too many photographers in the running space from running marathon photos and whatnot that they are literally just a shoot, dump,
right.
get the money. They will post every single photo that they shot of you, whether it's in focus, whether it's exciting, whether you're completely blocked or your pants are falling down.
Mm-hmm.
They like, I mean, you all remember the photo from the dude that basically pooped himself.
Right.
Like, I would never do that.
Right.
Why would you post
right.
a photo of somebody?
Well, sometimes it'll be funny. Sometimes there might be a ridiculous picture of me like doing something before a race or after a race or something that happened, and you might just send it to me in private and be like, hey, look at this one.
I was at Twisted last year, and there is a steep climb that comes out of the cemetery, and I was on my way back to the van. So my van's at the bottom of this climb.
Mm-hmm.
I've already gone up the climb, gone through the scores, came back down, and I don't know what this would probably be like 60K in. I know it's past the 50K mark. It's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And dude's coming up the hill, and I just hear,
oh.
I'm like, oh, man. And so he just kind of leaned over and put his hand on the tree, and I said, I'm documenting this. He's like, that's okay. And so I didn't get him throwing up. I just got him, like,
the recovery phase.
leaned over, and I'm just like, I don't care. It's good picture, but there's nothing graphic about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll still, like, post it. But it just leads to this whole like endless barrage because it usually takes me about a week
yeah.
from a time of an event ends. Now, when I say an event ends, that's the time I get home.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just don't have the time to sit there and edit in the van because I'm either sleeping or driving.
Right.
Right.
We get the same thing with
results.
Like people will cross the finish line. We are still in the middle of a high five, and they're like, are results posted? And I'm like, how is that even, like, what? I'm like, no, I just touched your hand. Like, how could that possibly be a thing?
But I guess if you're coming from, because in road races, don't they sometimes
if
have,
it's,
like, the live.
If it's chip timed, it's, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And that's the thing with, the same thing with the photos with those.
Right.
It's just a shoot and dump.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, they turn their chips over to, or their cards over to the people, and they
right.
dump them and upload them.
Right.
And so when I first started out and I didn't have the, like, well, I can make, you know, let's work with the race directors to provide some downloads for the
right.
the people. And I'll work the money side with the race directors so that people could have it because everybody wants free photos. And it doesn't always work out that way. But I was noticing that there is a window for people that want photos.
Right.
And it's usually if a race happens on a Saturday, if you don't have them by Tuesday, they do not think about that race again.
Yeah, they like move on.
It is such a quick window that they move away from it.
Mm.
But I've noticed the, like the more epic the event, the more chill the people are.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
the quicker, shorter races, people want them up. Day of.
Yeah. Right. So I got two things I want to touch on real quick still. So we've got a little bit of time. The first one, and this is important because I have been guilty of this like even recently, but it's I have in my notes it just says let's talk theft. Because what I'm about to say is stealing, but people will screenshot your pictures that are for sale and use them for whatever they want. And I want to talk a little bit about like why we shouldn't do that and what happens if somebody calls you out on it, how should you respond? Oh. I know. I said a little bit of time. I said a little bit of time left.
This is a touchy one for me.
Yeah. But like that's why I wanted to preface it. It's stealing when we do this.
I'm very protective of my photos and my work. Mm-hmm. Just as a painter has their tools and their canvas, they want their work to be out there and to be appreciated. Mm-hmm. And this is why I shoot for quality, not quantity. Mm-hmm. I want that photo, but I want to have a relationship with that person that I took the photo with. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't tell you how many people I took photos of that we never knew. And then all of a sudden, every race I see them at, they're greeting me. They're like, hey, how are you doing? And
right.
Like, mm-hmm. I see them all over the East Coast at different races because the ultra world is a small world.
Yeah.
Right.
But I want people to like know that like, hey, it's me. There's a person mm-hmm. behind this. I take pride in what I do. I'm not just dumping them out there off an iPhone, putting mm-hmm. them up on a Facebook cloud album, and
which compresses the heck out of photos.
Well, you can only post a certain thing, and then after that, it's useless.
But so I think there's an analogy to this because a lot of times people will say like, dude, come on, that's a picture of me. You took the picture of me. Like, how do you get the right to sell me? And it's like, okay, well, if I was in a park,
do you want me to go through the legalities of this?
But if I was in a park with my easel, my paints, my watercolors, and I was painting a scene, and maybe there was a couple reading a book, and they came over, and they were like, oh, that's us, and they took the painting. Yeah. Never would anybody stand for that, right? But we do with pictures for some reason. I think it's digital currency isn't looked at the same way.
Yep.
By the masses.
Yeah, and you know, I've gotten into some arguments with people. I've broken a couple of relationships over it. But I think I've made my voice loud enough in the community locally that people mostly respect it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there is no expectation of privacy in the public.
Right.
That, so legality-wise, that's what it boils down to. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want your photo up, contact me and say, hey, I don't want to be in that album and I will take you down. Mm-hmm. When I sell stuff through my gallery,
mm-hmm.
it is primarily for the race director for his branding.
Right.
Everything else is for personal use. I cannot tell you how many times I've had people come in and download photos of people randomly.
Right.
I've had people download the whole album before.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you downloading hundreds of photos of people that you don't know? Where are you putting these? What are you doing with them?
That's interesting.
But, you know, if you see that little goat logo on there, it's on there for a reason.
Right.
And if you don't want it on there, contact me. Let's have a conversation. I kind of did a chuckle the other day because I went to a group run and they were going to do a group photo. And I said, no, I'll go take the group photo. And I usually don't do this. I have a standing thing that I don't touch anybody else's phone to take photos with. Like, you cannot give me a phone and I will not take a photo of you for it. It is just, I will not.
Not your thing.
This was somebody's birthday and I took it so that the other person that was holding the phone could be in the photo with the birthday person.
Right.
And after I took it, I heard in the background, I'm pretty sure it was Garth saying, that'll be on Facebook later with a goat logo on it and you have to pay for it. It's funny, but the legality is I would do own that photo.
Right. Yeah.
If you take a photo with anybody's thing, you technically own it.
Right. Good times. I own a lot of stuff then.
So.
Because I take people's pictures with their phones all the time.
Yeah.
But I try not to be an asshole about it. I used to be pretty vocal about it, and now I have enough people around me that we'll stick up for it and see.
I think we try to do a job too, and we send out an email to runners that photos are live. We you know, ask to support everything, you know, especially with our events. Everything comes down to like, how can we support this local community? It's why I've been getting really vocal against some of these big conglomerates that are coming in. It's like, you know, our photographer is local, our food is local, where we shop for our aid station food, like everything is local. And I want our runners to understand that everything that they're spending is staying right here. And when they go with these huge organizations, it drives me nuts because that money, it leaves immediately.
There, as much as I charge the race directors, I don't charge enough.
Right.
And I don't say that as a complaint. I feel like what I'm charging now is what is fair for the trail community and the ultra community. Mm-hmm. And I know that some people don't want to pay for stuff and it irks them. But if you consider everything that goes into what I do, the cost of my gear,
right,
the cost of the van and the insurance, mm-hmm, the cost of time.
Well, I was just going
to
say,
from
time,
the time I have to prepare all my gear,
right,
the research that I do going into a race, the time that I leave, mm-hmm, to the time I come back, and all that time, if I charge a race director
an hourly rate,
every piece of that puzzle,
right,
I would never be hired.
Right.
Right.
There are some sports where you can get away with charging like that. The trail and ultra world is not that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to make a living doing it in a way that I see is feasible and what I see is fair.
Yeah.
And so if you see the little goat logo on there, it's on there for a reason.
Yeah.
And if someone calls you out because you screenshot or, you know, somehow stole the picture.
Don't be a dick. I'll say it.
And if you are a dick, there is a blacklist.
Yeah.
And you will never see a photo of yourself again. And you'll wonder why.
Yeah.
There is somebody famous in our running community who is on that blacklist and will never get a photo of himself.
That's funny. So, I mean, there's things that we could talk about forever and ever and ever here, like, and we have on long runs, but just one last thing to go here. It's really, you know, what do you see is, what's the future for you guys doing this together? It's really grown. It seems like you have a great lineup this year, but where do you think it gets going? When are you going to start hiring people?
I mean, I'm kind of in the next phase right now where my day job is ready to make the switch to where I'm doing. I mean, I want to say it so that I'm doing photography full time. I'm already doing photography full time. There's weeks where I'm 80 plus hours a week and running on no sleep. But yeah, I'd love to get to a point where I could hire somebody else to be a second photographer. But part of that is working with race directors and people that understand the need for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you just want marketing photos, you're not going to want a secondary photographer. If you want all of your racers to have photos,
right,
then that's where second photographer comes in. But again, you go back to cost. Cost expounds. And where do people want to throw that cost? You're going to throw it back onto the racers. You're going to throw it back onto yourselves as the RDs.
Right.
And I don't think there's not enough ballooning in. I don't want to say in the ultra and trail running in general. I want to say more on the East Coast in general.
Yeah.
Like West Coast, they have photographers out.
Right.
Like 3 to 4 photographers on course. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they survive other than they're bigger running companies and that's all they do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But like we've got one kid that's a sophomore in college. We got the other one who's a junior in high school. And so we're nearing to the point where we're like, I'll be 45, she'll be 44, and we'll be looking at our next stage of like, what do we do for life? And
I'm like, just put it all out there. Jeez.
Well, I mean, no, it's.
We'll have a conversation about this later.
She's a young 44.
I don't care. We've been together for 20 years. What difference does it make at this point? But we're looking at the next point of our life, and there's a lot of people that aren't looking at their next stage of their life until their 60s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to look at 45 years old and say, I can reasonably think of what's next.
Yeah.
Both my kids will be in college. We're no longer ground down to having to be stuck here. Like, you know, we're taking the kid back and forth to Color Guard. Love our kids. And Emma
it's
was
a lot of driving.
Emma was back and forth across country, indoor track, outdoor track. So we were playing this balancing game of like, okay, I'm coming home. I have a half an hour. I've got to go pick Emma from work. I've got to go get my run in.
Right.
So I'm going to get my run in while I'm waiting to pick up Emma. She's got to pick her up from somewhere else. And then they've got to go back out at 6. Then we got to pick them up at 8. and like, and oh, I've got to be at the theater. I'm not going to be home till 10. See you in the morning. And then like it would get into like the weekends and like there's like 15,000 things going on. But if we can get ourselves calmed down to the point where like, okay, the kids are now gone. We're not transporting them. We're worrying about us.
Right.
Our weekends, like she doesn't like Manny and the Jenny is nice because it's local. I cover a lot of stuff that aren't local.
Out the Adirondacks, down Pennsylvania, down
covering these races without having a secondary person to drive the van around means I do a lot of out and backs. And figuring out like, okay, how do I cover this by myself? How do I keep myself like centered? Like I tend to forget about food during
that's
the day.
My job.
And so, you know, I'll put in 12 to 15 miles hiking. Drink very little water.
Forget to eat.
Drink four Red Bulls and not like no food at all.
All the ones I help
and so
in the van.
Here comes 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, and I'm just like wasted and just wanna just die.
Shot. Yeah.
And so to be able to look and say, I might be able to finally have her come out on more events with me to be able to help balance me out a little bit more, because that. You know, that's what she's been to me for 20 years. It's been a balance to my life. She has been there to support everything I do. Like, I technically started the business in 97, but I put it as a sole proprietor in 2004. We got married in 2003.
Right.
And I've been doing 2 to 3 jobs since then. And she's been there the whole time supporting that. And she's as much as of this business as I am. You just don't see her.
Yeah. Aww. And that's why we asked her to come on.
And so if you do see her, thank her for letting me be me.
Yeah.
And because if she wasn't there, people would have a much nastier run. Her.
A much nastier run. And God knows we don't need that.
There's two people at this table who take the brunt of a lot of my complaining. One on runs and one in... And Eric doesn't hear a lot of the shit that goes through Elise. But, yeah.
Well, listen, I'm glad that we were able to share a lot of that. I hope that it opens up a little bit of perspective to people that are listening about what goes into, you know, how you get the shot. And it doesn't just show up. So there's a lot to it. It's a family business. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of practice and patience and expertise. Trial and error. And we are glad to have you in this community, and I hope that people can take a listen to this and learn from it.
Absolutely. So thank you guys so much for being here today. We are going to wrap up for this week, but before we go, we just wanted to make a quick announcement that Trails Rock races are open, so registration for all of our stuff is open now. We would love to have you join us for some of our races, and if racing is not your thing, you can also always sign up to volunteer, and you can do all of that right on Ultra Sign Up. So we are moving to volunteers signing up through Ultra Sign Up.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah. So, all right, next time we'll be back. It'll be just me and Sheila, and we'll be talking about one of these lists of topics that I have on this sheet here that she doesn't know about, and I'll probably tell her the day of.
I do know about.
But
the
tell her. I'll tell her the topic the day of, and then I'll sound like I studied it and. I'm so much more into this. No, we'll figure it out ahead of time. But 2 weeks, you'll hear from the two of us, and then we'll have another guest back on in a month. So sweet. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Yep. Thank you for listening, everyone else.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. Sounds great. Self-destruct.